Friday marked the retirement ceremony of Admiral Paul Zukunft, Commandant of the Coast Guard. Last week, before he sailed off to a retirement in Hawaii, Zukunft sat down in my studio and reflected on a 40-year career.
In 1973, when I headed off to the Coast Guard Academy, the incentive there was my parents asked me, how am I going to pay for my college education? And as most people know, our service academies, whether it's Coast Guard, Air Force, West Point, Annapolis, you do not pay your tuition, but you do have a service commitment when you graduate.
And did you expect that it would be an entire career of 40 years?
So 1977, we get our diplomas, the commandant is up on the stage, and we're ribbing each other with our elbows and say, yeah, that'll be you someday. He says, yeah, right. Well, that was me on the stage this past Wednesday with the vice president as we welcomed the most diverse class to ever graduate from the Coast Guard Academy, the class of 2018.
And in diverse meaning in what ways?
So the highest number of minorities, our Coast Guard Academy right now is about 33% underrepresented minorities, nearly 40% women. My class had no women. And less than 1% African-American. So we have finally made progress to reflect the nation we serve.
Sure. And what were some of your more memorable duty stations that still stick in your mind after all these years?
Yeah,
they do fade a little bit.
Yeah, they do. But the one that really stuck it for me when I was 24 years old, and I'm captain of the patrol boat. So pretty young. I'm a lieutenant junior grade, and we had the Mariel boat lift back in 1980. And for whatever reason, I told the crew, hey, we're turning south, something just instinctively, and we did. And about 50 miles later, we come across about a 40-foot boat with over 250 people on it. We come alongside, and the parents are literally pitching their babies at complete strangers, uniformed members of the United States Coast Guard. We saved every single one of them. Whether it was divine intervention, but that moment on, I said, I know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. As long as the Coast Guard will have me, I'm a Coast Guardsman for life.
Well, even divine intervention requires the Coast Guard to complete the will, right?
Well, we saw that again this year when our Coast Guard again came to the rescue. Nearly 12,000 lives saved this last hurricane season.
And as far as missions, I mean, there's been a lot of mission change, mission creep, mission expansion over those 40 years. I mean, the drug interdiction wasn't as big as it is now, and the military and national security involvement didn't seem to be as big back in those days when people thought of the Coast Guard as simply guarding the coast mainly for safety purposes.
Well, back in my earlier days, it was a bipolar world. It was the Cold War. In many respects, a much simpler world as well. Even though the stakes were much higher, now we have, a multipolar world. We have, terrorist organizations that don't play by the rules, that will martyr themselves. And so, the military can't be all places, all times, to all people. So our members serving all branches of the service today are really living in a very, very complex world today, much more complex than when I was a younger member of the armed services.
And talking about today's Coast Guards, what would you say are you're retiring as Commandant, so you can boast a little here, but what are some of the top qualities you think that it exhibits today?
Everything always begins with the people, and we're still an all-voluntary service. We've been an all-voluntary service dating back to 1972 when the draft went away. And we are bringing in some of the best talent, in fact, the best talent I have ever seen in the 45 years that I've been wearing a Coast Guard uniform, officer and enlisted. The biggest challenge for our officers is the qualities and the experience and the education that many of our enlisted members serve. So the lines are very blurred between officer, enlisted, and talent because we've got talent across the board at every pay grade in our service today.
And you don't really have the recruiting challenges, I don't think, that some of the armed services have.
One advantage we have there is we enjoy the highest retention rate of all the armed services. Right now, a recruit coming out of basic training, about 40% of them historically are still on active duty 20 years later. An officer upon being commissioned will be on active duty 60% of that group 20 years later as well. So if you don't have to continually retrain a workforce, continually have to recruit. We've actually had to lower our numbers this year because of the high retention rates, which then gets into our ability to be selective in terms of who do we bring into Team Coast Guard.
We're speaking with Paul Zutkunft, recently retired as Commandant of the Coast Guard. And with respect to that retention, what are some of the programs specific to the Coast Guard that you think help retention? Because I think, again, all of the armed services are grappling with that issue. Some of them aren't keeping up with it.
Tom, a lot of it really begins in pushing responsibility down to very junior levels, not micromanaging your workforce, allowing people to make honest mistakes as they learn their trade, to not have a zero defect operating environment. But you can go out in any waterway today and you'll see an E-4 running a several million dollar high speed vessel doing law enforcement, saving lives, and there's no one looking over this junior petty officer's shoulder telling them how to do their job. So we give them the tools they need to succeed at what they do, and I think that's a big part. The other is the work they do is, let's just face it, it's really, really relevant, whether it's saving lives during hurricanes, confiscating drugs in the transit zone. We had a young seaman. She had just come out of Cape May. She's on an inland buoy tender. That manages our inland waterways. And so what they do is they push a barge into a riverbank. They cut all the brush away so you can see the visual aids to navigation. There's water snakes, water moccasins, fire ants, bees, everything that can bite or hurt you, poison ivy. And I said, did you ever think you'd join the Coast Guard to do this? She'd only been the Coast Guard for 2 months. And she says, you know, Commandant, if I'm not out here clearing this brush out and making sure that aid to navigation is visual, there's over $2 billion of commerce that go by this point every single day. She got the connection. She's relevant.
Yeah, so sounds like she's headed for big things somewhere down the line at this point. And with respect to that inland part, the interaction with the public, the rescues and all the other cliches about the Coast Guard. How has that all changed? And how is interaction with the public these days? Because, you just say the world is different than it was 40 years ago.
Well, 40 years ago, Tom, we wouldn't be having this conversation, quite honestly. Our approach to any external relations was the Heisman Trophy pose. It was no disclosure whatsoever, no transparency whatsoever. And in this day, if you are not in marketing and sales, you are leading an organization that's doomed to fail. So a lot of it is just getting the word out. So we'll talk about the inland rivers just quickly. Runs through over 30 different states. You start adding up all of the constituents in those states, members of Congress. I won't say who, but I remember telling a very senior member in the Senate that you're a maritime state. He says, no, we're not. We're inland. I said, no, a river runs through it. Billions and billions of dollars a year. They make the connection. And I said, oh, by the way, the ships that do that work, their average age is over nearly 60 years old. I need to modernize that fleet. It moves $4.6 trillion of commerce each year. My entire budget's only $12 billion. And for $20 million or less, I need to buy newer ships. So guess what? We're building newer ships. Five classes of ships, in fact.
Yeah, let's get to that because just the other day there was an interdiction of drugs, average day, 5,000 pounds of cocaine somewhere near the West Coast. The stories I read mentioned that the ship that did that work, 53 years old.
That's one of our newer ones.
The Active, I believe it was.
No, she's up there in age. I mean, the only reason these ships are still in service, it's the generations of crew members that have served on, in this case, our Coast Guard cutter Active.
And the modernization of the fleet has had fits and starts over the past decade or so, and there's been competing vendors and so forth. Where is it at this point with respect to what you hope as the to-be state of the fleet?
Yeah, we're building ships that are on schedule, on budget, meeting, in fact, exceeding the initial requirements. The last 8 ships that came off the production line are fast response cutters, beautiful ships. No discrepancies whatsoever. These are ready to go into action once we take delivery. And so that has really been a good news story for us as we modernize the fleet, quantum leap above the ships they replace. And that's really going to be, I think, a standing attribute of our Coast Guard as we march into this 21st century.
So here it is, 2021. By 2025, would you say that the fleet will be replaced in some of those, like the age of the Active, will have Active 2 in their place?
Yeah, by that time we should have the fourth one delivered, and at that rate we'll be producing 2 of those a year. We're still talking another 15, 18 years before we finish building out the replacement for the active. But all of these are time because the next thing we'll have to replace is our H-65 helicopter. So even though I spent my many years at sea, I'm not tone deaf to our aviation needs as well, to include unmanned aerial systems.
And let's talk a little bit more about those, the air part of the Coast Guard, which I think is not as well recognized, except for the helicopters, but those are old also.
Old, but again, well-maintained. I give our Aviation Technical Training Center down in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, great credit. But the people who fly our aircraft also maintain our aircraft as well. It has now been over 6 years since we have had a fatality in our aviation community, the longest we've ever gone in the 102 years that the Coast Guard has been in aviation. I cross my fingers, but to date, as the Commandant of the Coast Guard, I have not had to call a mother, father, or a loved one to say that their member of the Coast Guard was killed while conducting Coast Guard operations. Yes, we have suicides, motorcycle deaths, and so forth, but not truly while we're carrying out our missions. The only service chief that can make that claim.
And you mentioned unmanned aerial craft. What role do you envision for those, and how do you acquire them?
So we already have, Tom, small ship-based unmanned aerial systems. And when our commanding officers, these are captains, you know, full bird captains, saying, you know, what am I going to do with this toy airplane?
These are like the quadcopter size things.
These are about 10-foot wingspan, and it's an airplane, and it has a sensor on it. But what we would typically do when we see a go-fast, our helicopters, our manned helicopters, very distinct sound to it. And immediately the traffickers, they throw all their electronics into the ocean. They dump their load, and sometimes the load sinks. And if we don't get video of it, it's very hard to get a prosecutable case. Well, now we use these very stealthy unmanned aerial systems, and we literally stalk our prey to the point where eventually these go fast, they have to stop and rest. And maybe they close their eyes for a few minutes, and usually it's in the middle of the night, and their wake-up call is a Coast Guard boarding officer speaking in perfect Spanish, hands up. We seize the crime scene. We seize the electronics, which then leads us to the next case and the next case. So I give our crews great credit for using this capability, refining the tactics that really gives us an upper hand advantage.
So in other words, you get that hover and stare and track capability that you get with a helicopter at much quieter levels and much lower cost.
And safer as well. Many times these conditions we're flying in a tropical climate. You get low ceilings where then it's very challenging to recover that helicopter, again, in the middle of the night. If you can do it unmanned, worst case is you lose an unmanned platform. You don't lose the people in it.
Sure. And let's zoom out again, because in the first half, I asked you what some of the strengths of the Coast Guard are these days. As you leave, what are some of the principal challenges in your view?
Yeah. Well, the biggest challenge we have is, you know, we had the best budget ever in Coast Guard history in 2018. We can't view this as we just won the Super Bowl. It's a new season, and we're starting out all over again. And when I look into the future, I'm talking not too far out, 2023. If everything remains the same, GDP growth, interest rates in 2023 to service our nation's debt will be exceeding $800 billion a year, which is a lofty target for our Department of Defense. Well, to service our nation's debt, that curve is going to continue to climb while other non-discretionary spending at best will be flatlined, or it may have to go down to accommodate this rise in servicing our nation's debt. That, I see, is the biggest challenge going forward.
So basically, you're floating in the same economic ocean as everybody else.
Yeah. And so the good news is, you know, we don't have a huge appetite. If people have to tighten their belts, but again, yeah, as an armed service, you know, one line item in the defense budget would fully fund the entire Coast Guard.
We're speaking with Paul Zukunft, recently retired as Commandant of the Coast Guard. And we were talking earlier about the extent to which waterways penetrate many states and not just the few along the coasts. And one of those is Alaska. And as the Arctic gets to be more strategic, I think the world has caught up with your thinking with respect, or at least Congress has, with respect to icebreakers. What do you see for the future of the Coast Guard interacting with the Navy principally, I guess maybe the Air Force also, in that region?
So we've changed our narrative. I mean, we have traditionally three coasts, Atlantic, Pacific, Gulf Coast. We really have four coasts, the fourth being the Arctic coast. That coast is opening, in unprecedented ways where it's envisioned that as early as 2030, there could be ice-free seasons in the entire Arctic. And then so what's filling this vacuum that used to be filled with ice and now it's open ocean? Well, we're seeing a lot more human activity. We're seeing Russia militarizing the Arctic region. China is taking delivery of a second icebreaker, and we're seeing a maritime Silk Road go around the world to include the Arctic as well. And we have been writing paper after paper about why the Arctic is strategic, trying to get an investment in the Arctic. And the reply is often, we can't fund it. We have a GDP 10 times that of Russia. Yet Russia can afford 40 icebreakers. We, the most prosperous nation in the world, say we can only afford two. Good news is we're buying icebreakers. We have an integrated program office with our United States Navy. We've locked in the requirements. We have a request for a proposal out on the street. We should award that probably by the end of this calendar year so we can get the first heavy icebreaker delivered in 2023.
So despite the warmth and the melting happening there, there's still lots of ice.
There's a lot of ice, and an icebreaker is almost the wrong terminology to use. It's a platform that gives you access to an iced environment. It provides you domain awareness. We may have to weaponize an icebreaker in the future. This is a platform that will serve our nation for, if history repeats itself, a minimum of 30 years, probably 40 plus. And so what's this going to look like 30, 40 years from now? So you really have to look into the future. And look into the past. It was in 1867 when Secretary Seward acquired the territory of Alaska.
Seward's Folly.
Seward's Folly. 2 cents an acre, and was called Seward's Folly. If Seward was around during the Cold War, and if Russia had a military base, a Joint Base Elmendorf in Alaska, right on our back step, I don't think that's any folly, not to mention all the vast resources that we've extracted from the 49th state of Alaska over the years as well. So I think we need to look into the future as well. Just go back to Seward, to present day. The only thing that's different now is the pace of change.
Sure. And one last question on the Arctic. Do you worry about the time that cruise ship, whatever it might be, stalls or lists over or breaks down up there? It's going to be probably in your lap to help get them the heck out of there.
Yeah. Well, the biggest concern is less than 5% of the Arctic is charted to even anything close to what we would call 21st century standards. And there's a good reason for that. It's been covered with ice for all these many years, so there's very limited survey work. So any ship plying these high latitudes, if they stumble upon an uncharted seamount, it will be catastrophic. At best today, it will take us 4 to 6 hours to get the first aircraft on scene. It was the Carpathia that came to the rescue of Titanic many, many years ago, and yet we are still flying the International Ice Patrol ever since the sinking of the Titanic. It'll be catastrophic if there is such an event, and there will be a significant loss of life despite our best efforts. It is just too remote.
And earlier we spoke about, to change the topic here a little bit, the recruits and the uniform members and the retention that you have there. What about the civilian workforce?
Well, our civilian workforce, Tom, and I want to thank your father, who was one of our
my uncle,
a career civil servant. They're often our unsung heroes. And, they, even though they don't take the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, we can't do it without them. These are true professionals, and many of them, stay with our Coast Guard family for 20, 30, 40. I just had lunch with a 50-year career civil servant in the United States Coast Guard. And I asked, if you can do it all over again, what would you do differently? I'd start all over right where I did before. But this is an integral part of our workforce, our active reserve civil servant. We have a nearly 30,000 volunteer auxiliary. Wear a uniform similar to this. They tend to be my age,
No, let's face it, they're older. But
well,
I'm
not disagreeing. You're exactly my age, it turns out.
But no, they do it for pride of nation and for no salary, helping in our Coast Guard missions.
And what will you do next? I mean, there's all these boards to join, all these think tanks to contribute to.
Well, the first thing is reestablish who you are. This is what I am right now. But, you know, when I step off the podium, I don't expect people to come up to me and say, Admiral, we can't make a decision without you. First, I don't expect them to call me Admiral anymore. I'm Paul. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. So those are going to be the first priorities, and I'm a friend, is reestablish those relationships, which our families don't get a choice. We do when we volunteer to serve, but they often find themselves in the shadow of the service while the service member serves. So I need to remove the shadow and move to a place where there are fewer shadows, and that is where we own a house in the Aloha State of Hawaii.
Do you also own a boat?
Next job is to find a friend who has a boat.
Former Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Paul Zukunft, who retired Friday. We'll post the interview in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.